welcome to Pixel Punishers Podcast, episode 14. And this time it actually is episode 14. I know last time I said it was 14. I was just kidding. Actually, I was 13 and I was trying to skip 13 because of bad luck and superstitions. That's not true either. Actually, I just messed up and I said 14 last time. So if you're listening in succession, you're going to hear 14 twice in a row, but they are two different episodes, I promise. So anyway, I am your host, Tony Roseland, here with my co-host, Mr. Jed Conklin. What's up, Jed?
Yo!
What's the good word? What's the word around the campfire this week?
Word around the campfire? This week has been a little bit of post-production work and a whole lot of building shit.
What are you doing post-production on?
The ad campaign photo shoot I did with Chase a few weeks ago, just finishing up some middles and done.
He's in the fucking woods somewhere backpacking in Montana or
maybe
fighting off
grizzly. He might be
bears.
Bear scat.
It's true. By now he might be. I can just see the Reverend where he's like curled up and bears are taking swats at him. I don't know.
Hopefully nobody buried him alive.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, that was a pretty good movie.
It was a good movie. I've watched it twice.
You ever run into bears in the woods?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really?
I wrestle them.
Yeah?
If given the opportunity.
You are a man's man, I got to say.
I've actually never wrestled a bear. I know that's hard for you guys to believe. I have been charged.
Have you really?
Yeah.
By a grizzly or black bear?
It's a black bear, actually.
Wow.
And, I was bow hunting and for elk. And I heard what I thought was an elk coming in, and it was a black bear running full speed, all four legs off the ground, like a thoroughbred going around a track.
No.
Yeah, and it was in huckleberries, which are thick for those that know what those are. And my bow was on a sling in my back, and I wore a knife at the time on my backpack harness strap, or my backpack strap. And I just remember thinking, there was zero fear. There was no time for any of that. It was
fight or flight.
Yeah. And there was no flight. And there was, I was hoping there wasn't going to be much of a fight, but I anticipated it. And I just remember grabbing that knife out of the sheath. Like, I don't even think I got it out of the sheath before it all was coming to a head. And I just, at the top of my lungs, just all I could think of was to scream, just fuck you, bear, at the top of my lungs.
Did it work?
He came to a screeching halt, like a cartoon character stop, and ended up landing on his butt. Like sitting up, looking at me, looking at him, looking at me, about, call it 15 feet away.
Oh my God.
And he just sat there and he started chomping at it, you know, chomping his jaws. It's kind of a sign of aggression. And I remember slowly taking my bow off my back, just watching him, and I slowly got an arrow knocked. And I had a bear tag, and I was like, well, and I came to full draw, and he stood up. And I was like just about to like settle in, and he spun and wheeled. And then there was the adrenaline dump.
Oh, my
luckily
God.
That was the only thing that dumped. But yeah, it was was intense. They're black, you know, black bears, more attacks than grizzly bears by far. There's more black bears.
Sure.
But they're no joke.
Really? God, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
How old were you?
Oh, I don't know. It hadn't been that long ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maybe 6-7 years ago.
Oh,
those are my 30s.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're still here.
Yeah. Sorry, Chase, if you're not.
Yeah. So obviously Chase isn't here this week because he is off in the woods somewhere. Hopefully he's not. I don't see him carrying a bow and I don't see him carrying a knife. He did say he bought a gun though, didn't he?
He did. He did.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems like that would piss it off unless it was a real big gun.
Oh, that's a different podcast. Yeah. There's been many done. Bear spray versus pistol. Bear spray versus pistol. Everybody has their own thing.
Yeah.
But I do both. It depends on if I'm by myself or with a clan.
I just stay out of the fucking woods. Nope.
That works too.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. I should probably mention this week's sponsor again, B&H Photo. They're giving away another $20 gift card this week, which, by the way, nobody's claimed last week's.
What? Yeah. Nobody did photos of them going, that's such an easy one.
I know. Nobody's done
somersaults down a hill.
As of the time we're recording this, nobody has claimed that one yet.
Frankly speaking, I do that for fun for free.
Right. Especially after a couple beers.
Yes.
But nobody's claimed that one. So it's still up for grabs as of right now. By the time somebody actually posts one, maybe, or is listening to this, maybe
ladies
somebody's already posted one.
Ladies and gentlemen, get your shit together, grab those ankles, and somersault down a hill for $20. Come on.
Tag us, tag B&H, tag Pixel Punishers, tag B&H on that somersault video. Throw that on social media, Instagram preferably. Twitter will work as well. And we'll send you out a $20 gift card from B&H. So,
boom.
What are we going to do this week for it? You came up with such a good one last week.
I did, yeah. Everybody submitted. We're going to have to find something where nobody else wants to do this week. Let me think on that.
All right. End of the podcast.
Maybe make it something a little bit more simple. Apparently, we don't have as adventurous of a listener group as I thought we did.
How about photos of a bear? Best photo of a bear.
Best photo of a bear. You better clarify. Does that bear mean a fuzzy critter that lives in the woods, or is it bear anything else?
Oh, I guess that's up to the imagination. Okay. Let's see how creative the audience is.
B-E-A-R or B-A-R-E?
Let's see how creative the audience is. Knowing our audience, we're going to get B-A-R-E, but...
Copy that.
That's probably a good clarification. But speaking of B&H, you know, they do that. We talked about it last time. You pay the tax, we pay you back. The PayBoo card that they have, it's basically their in-store credit card that they, you buy stuff on that, and whatever you buy, you do have to pay the tax, but then they credit back that card for whatever that sales tax was. Kind of a weird way. I guess it's a cool way of getting around the sales tax thing now that we have to pay sales tax on the internet. So, I don't know. You have to apply. You have to have, I guess, decent credit. That's going to determine your credit line. So you may not be buying your Hasselblad if you got shitty credit, you know. But whatever. The PayBoo card at B&H Photo, the card that pays you back. So go check it out. Thanks to those guys for sponsoring the podcast this week. And post your bear photo and get $20. I'll send you a gift card.
PayBoo. Save the tax.
I think here. Say, you pay the tax, we pay you back.
You pay the tax, we pay you back.
There you go. You do have a voice for radio. Susie was right, man. She was cool, huh?
I like Susie.
Yeah, she's pretty rad. So I've worked with her a few times, and man, she is on it. She's the kind of that just kind of, she sees stuff that needs to be done.
Yeah.
You know, she'll pick propping and all that stuff. If you're behind on one shot, she'll get started on the next shot and, you know, rough everything in. I mean, she's pretty awesome.
I hope we do that workshop we talked about doing at the new restaurant.
That would be cool. We can get her up here for that.
That'd be cool.
Do a food photography.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
I think it'd be fun.
How's the restaurant going?
It's good. It's it's a lot of freaking work.
Dude, I stopped by finally last week and saw this thing, and it's impressive. I mean,
thanks.
You got skills, man.
Thank you. I got a lot of irons in the fire.
You do.
Yeah.
We're still sitting at our fold-up podcast table here.
Yeah, sorry about that.
For those who don't know, Jed offered to... Well, he may have even been on the air last time, or it may have been after the podcast. I don't remember. But we need a new podcast table, and I wanted to make one butcher block top with metal legs and all this stuff. Jed, being the man's man that he is, knows how to weld, and I don't. So I bought some metal... Bought a butcher block top, took it to Jed's. He started welding the thing up, showing me how to weld, which I need to spend more time and learn that. And we got about halfway through, and it was time to put the kids to bed and all that stuff. So we had to crush it for the time being. So that's still in limbo. We'll get back to that project, but pretty awesome.
It's going to be cool.
It is. I want all those toys, man. I want a welder so freaking – I want all that shit, you know, so – At the new house.
It's just more shit, man.
I know. Well, I'm trying to build a workshop at the new house that I can have all my stuff out. Because
toy house.
Yeah. You know, the problem when you want to do something is you got to go dig the tool out and plug it in and set it up and clear some space and all that shit. It's a pain in the ass.
It is.
But if you can set up a workshop that stays a workshop, then it's easy to run out and rip something real quick. And you know, so
I know.
I'm in the same boat.
I want one.
Yeah.
I want my own workshop.
Well, fortunately, where we live now...
We can have one. Yeah. I just have to plow through the rest of this ahead of me.
When are you trying to open?
Well, we got some bad news this week from one of the subcontractors. But we were shooting for a Labor Day opening because I am out of town on various excursions and whatnot through most of September. However, they're not going to finish with what they need to get done until the 30th of August. So we're looking at probably the second week of September as of now. Mm. But who knows what might or might not come. The good news is we were supposed to open about a year ago. So what's another
month?
In
the grand scheme of things, it's not, yeah, it's not a lot, right?
Exactly. So, yep.
Well, it's going to be rad, dude. I like I said, when I was there, I've seen attempts at kind of a cool spot like you're doing, but nobody's pulled it off the level
thanks,
that you're doing that. So I think that's really cool. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait to pass out at the bar in there. And yeah, it'll be awesome. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Yeah, we're stoked on it. We really are. It's going to be cool. And, you know, one of these days I'll look back and forget all the hard work and just be enjoying it, you know.
It's just like kids, right? You forget when they're little all the sleepless nights, and when they're five, you don't even think about it anymore. So well, you're
right
not
now we're still
yet.
In the sleepless nights.
You're not quite there yet. Yeah. Your youngest is what, three? Two and a half?
Two.
Yeah. So it gets there, man. By the time they're like 5, 6 years old, they become whole different people that can do a lot of shit for themselves. It makes it so much easier.
Do they do chores then?
You can start getting, I got Elsa doing some chores. Nice. She gets $10 a week because I got tired of buying all this shit every time. So now I get to go, it's up to you. It's your allowance if you want to spend it. And she thinks a little bit harder now before she buys like a pooping unicorn or some bullshit, you know. When you're in line at Ace Hardware, they got all the crap on the, you know, they want So anyway, we started giving her allowance, but we're making a work for it. So she has to bring the trash cans up and she has to, you know, pick up all her shit around the house when we tell her to. She does a few other things. We have her doing, helping out with Soren. She watches him. Like if we need to go do whatever in the garage or wash the dishes or make dinner or something like that, she'll watch him. She has about a 20-minute threshold, but it helps.
That's pretty good, though.
Yeah, it allows you to do. So she plays with him.
It's about my threshold.
Right, mine too. So we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
We're all equivalent to 7-year-olds. Yeah.
Perfect. Took the words out of my mouth. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I bought a trailer yesterday.
What'd you buy?
Big Tex.
Like a utility trailer?
Yeah. I wanted a dump trailer, but goddamn, they're like $8,000-$9,000.
I know.
I just couldn't justify it. I don't do enough with it. I don't carry heavy enough load to justify it. So I bought a utility trailer with high sides and a gate and all that stuff. And it's going to work fine. I started hacking down. I bought a chainsaw. You got a chainsaw too, your wife said. I got a chainsaw. I started in a pole saw. I started cutting down stuff around the ranch. All these trees are growing all the way
ranch.
Down. That's what I'm calling it. I stole it. You have Camp Conklin. I needed a name. So I came up with Roseland Ranch.
Roseland Ranch. I like it.
You know, it's the only thing I could come up with an R that sounded right. So
I like it.
Anyway. Started cutting down the trees. Now I got all these tree branches laying around the yard. I got to do something with them. So I was like, I got to go buy a fucking trailer.
Not hire somebody for $50. Come get it. Why would you do that?
No, fortunately, the wife doesn't listen to the podcast. So I was able to justify the trailer through having a yard full of tree branches.
You know, I need a trailer.
Well, you can borrow it. I just happen to be across the street. It's an 8x12, man. It's solid size.
Nice trailer.
Sorry, 6.5x12. Solid size. So anyway... yeah, that's all going to that house is still going. We should be closing next week on the lake property. It's all good times. We're in escrow on our house.
Somebody offered something
for day one on the market. We got $15,000 over asking price.
What? That's exciting.
Yeah. But home inspection was today. So we'll see if we still have an offer as of tomorrow, it's a solid house. We should be fine. But yeah, I was shocked, man. I didn't think it would sell for a while, but we got quite a bit of activity. And they were the first ones to come look at it, and they threw in an offer word somebody else was going to come in and snatch it up. So
very cool.
Yeah, man.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's a big deal. We're stoked
on deal.
That. So
it is a big deal.
Just takes that whole stress thing off, you know. So now we got to worry about moving.
Yeah.
And
I don't wish that on anybody.
The ranch isn't done yet.
It's terrible.
So we got to go move in with mom and dad in the guest room for a while with two kids.
Did Carolina show you her harebrained idea for your...
Not yet.
No good.
No, tomorrow. We meet with her tomorrow for plans. So anyway, it's supposed to be a photography podcast.
It is?
I don't know. Whatever. I was scrolling around on the sites, you know, Petapixel and F-Stoppers and all that stuff. And I saw that Canon is coming out with their new mirrorless, supposedly like an 80 megapixel mirrorless camera. The
Why?
Next generation of the R.
Can somebody tell me why you need 80 megapixels?
I don't know. I can't understand. I thought we were done with the megapixel race. I thought the only ones doing megapixels was like medium format to try to justify their price somehow.
There's a reason they don't make 2 liters of beer.
What? Why?
But because you can't, there's no reason.
Just drink smaller ones?
Yeah. Well, like, once you get to a certain size beer, I don't know if this is a good analogy or not, but I feel like 80 megapixels, what in the, I just don't understand.
I think the 2 liter beer thing is because it would be warm by the time you got to the bottom.
But you could put it in the fridge.
Well, it'd be flat by the time you got
to the bottom. That's not true because the 2 liter Cokes don't go flat.
Yeah, they do.
Not by the time you, not if you don't drink them in, you know, within a week or so.
Oh man, gross. All right. Anyway, I don't drink Coke. I don't either. I don't drink soda.
Our sodas. We call them Cokes in Kentucky. Everything's a Coke.
Everything is. Yeah, that's where I grew up on the East. Everything was a Coke.
Everything's a Coke. Doesn't matter what it is. Mm-hmm. I'll have a Coke. What kind of Coke would you like?
Yeah, I'll have a Coke. I'll have what a do
Pepsi.
You want? I got seven up. I got Orange Crush. I got root beer. What kind of Coke you want?
Oh man. Yep. So 80 megapixels. What do you feel about that? I don't understand.
I don't know, man. I know there's guys out there that like it. There's
what do they do with them?
So as a former product shooter, I don't see a need, but a lot of guys shooting product want the resolution for some reason. I don't know why. At 30 or whatever they are doing now, 25 to 35 in that range, mm-hmm. plenty. Plenty.
For what I do, it's plenty.
Me too.
And I mean, some giant photographs. I've printed giant photographs.
And you and I both have shot for giant clients and they've never had a problem with the resolution photos that we've given them.
I've never had a problem with resolution even before like the 20 mark.
No.
I mean, I could see why you might want something more than 20 every once in a while, but it is rare. For me, I just don't understand. I'm also not full disclosure here, ladies and gents, I'm not like the full tech geek. I don't have a lot of the tech geek gene.
You know what? Let's talk about that because I should probably mention, I got so many messages this week, people asking about Barry. Barry was the former co-host on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
He quit and you're here now
mm-hmm.
and I'm happy.
And, well, I'm happy too.
People don't know
I don't
who
know
you
Barry.
Are necessarily. And we should tell them.
Okay.
So I think we very briefly touched on it last week, but maybe we tell the story of your career as a photojournalist
sure.
and how you got to Spokane and what you're sure. doing now and that stuff, just to give people some insight. We don't have a guest this week. You are the guest, essentially. I thought it would be a good idea just to let people understand who it is they're listening to, and you got a pretty cool story. So take it from the top.
From the very top?
I don't know, man.
Born in 1977, May 24th, at like 4-something.
All right.
Fast forward. I went to Western Kentucky University, for those photojournalists in the room. It's a fairly well-known photojournalism program, arguably the best.
How do you get into something like that? Do you have to have a portfolio of something that you submit?
I don't know the answer to that because I decided to go to Western Kentucky University ultimately because it was close. I got into several schools, but I ultimately ended up going there. And, I didn't apply for Yale or anything,
uh-huh.
but, you know, I got into the state schools I applied to and,
all the community colleges,
yeah. They accepted me offered big scholarships. We won't talk about that.
Right.
But
what are we drinking? Prison
beer.
Oh, we're bringing prison beer again. Yeah. Right.
So I went to Western Kentucky University first year or so. I just, you know, had no idea what I was going to do. By year about two, I was hanging on, making enough of a grade to start my sophomore year, and had been a pretty decent writer in high school. Which I don't know if that means that I was a pretty decent writer in Kentucky in high school. That probably doesn't mean much, but I was doing okay at writing. I liked it. I enjoyed it. So I decided I was going to do the print journalism program. And so I started that curriculum. Ultimately, that led to me starting the first outdoor sports column in the newspaper there, the College Heights Herald. It was called Grassroots.
This was as a writer, though, not
as a writer. This was as a writer. This is pre-photojournalism, Jed.
Gotcha.
And So I did that for several years, and my senior year during, let me back up a little bit. My counselor advisor, is that what they call them?
I don't know what they call them now.
People that,
they don't like counselor anymore.
I think it's advisor.
Kind of like stewardess.
They advise you on what classes to take and whatnot. He and I are friends and have been for years, and he recommended, there was a required basic photojournalism class, and called BASIC for short. It was a terrifying class for all the writers because it's very challenging class. It was the class that the photojournalism program used to weed out all the people that weren't really fit to go further down the curriculum. And so all the writers had to take it, and they were always terrified because half the class was writers, you know. And so anyway, he advised to take that your senior year when your workload was a little less. Now, I always joke going forward now that he's wasted 2 years of my life because I could have been done with the photojournalism program way earlier had I taken that class. But we get a good kick out of that. But anyway, I took it my senior year, fell in love with it. My professor was an adjunct professor at the time, and she was a National Geographic freelancer and had phenomenal Susie Post, and she had phenomenal photos from all over the world. And I just remember being terribly intrigued and took to it really well. I was a pretty mediocre writer. And I mean, I was getting through, and I would have probably gotten a job in photo in papers, and I would have, you know, whatever, probably limped on through life fine. But I was really keen on the photojournalism.
Were you good at it?
In my mind, at 20 years old or whatever, of course, you're always, you know.
Well, I mean, you acknowledge you were a mediocre writer.
I was
a,
right? Yeah.
You think you were a better photographer?
I was
at
a
the
better
time.
Photographer. Okay. Yeah, I was a better photographer. And so I went down the path and told my parents that I did graduate that year. I walked and got my diploma, but I never left. I just essentially just kept going for another 2 years. So I was in college short 7 years. Nice. I continued down writing my column, and I still wrote for the paper a little bit here and there, but I was doing photojournalism and really, you know, went from like kind of a we'll call it a B minus student to like 4.0 plus, like crushing it, and, you know, really found that it was like a passion as opposed to like something I was decent at and could make a living at. And that's when I realized pretty quickly within that year or two that I was definitely going down the rabbit hole, going to the light side.
You knew right then that's, you were going to make a career of that?
I knew right then and there. Yeah. I was going to make a career of it. And so, obviously coming from that school, very, very little, of the curriculum was centered around anything but newspaper photography. And it's something I've actually talked to them about. In years past, I've been part of off and on with the Mountain Workshops, which if you guys don't know about is awesome. You should check it out. I think I haven't been the last couple of years, but I think I've been 15 years of 17 in that workshop, which is really cool. You guys should check it out. We'll send the link in the notes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I basically decided that was going to be my path. And so upon graduation, I took some internships. I turned down a full-time job, which was one of the hardest things in my life. And
what was it?
It was a newspaper job at, what was the name of that little paper? It was in Illinois. We flew into Springfield, Illinois, and I was landing, and I'd already interned in Pinedale, Wyoming. And it was like the greatest summer of my life out west, lived in the mountains. I worked at the Pinedale Roundup, phenomenal summer.
Yeah.
Still like all time, you know? But I just come off of that, and here I come landing into Springfield, Illinois, which, you know, flat as a pancake and covered in corn. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't, you know, it's got its own beauty, but I'm a mountain boy. Mm-hmm. And I think I knew before the plane touched down, regardless of what was offered at the end of that runway, there's no way.
Nope. Not
no.
Gonna do it.
And so I turned that job down and then ended up taking another internship at the Concord Monitor in New Hampshire, and phenomenal.
Wow. So from way out in Wyoming all the way to the Northeast.
Way out in Wyoming in 2000, I quote unquote freelance. I think I did one job in Hawaii for a summer. I did a lot of climbing, a lot of fishing, a lot of everything else, but surfing, but no actual shooting. And then the next summer was the Concord Monitor 2002. Finished that internship, did that internship, came back, moved to Colorado, ski bummed, did my thing, moved back to Pinedale, Wyoming, took a job as like a designer / photographer / copywriter / everything in a little town like that. You're just lucky to find a job in the creative world. And then from there, out of the blue, I got a phone call from the Jackson Hole News and Guide. And they were looking for an intern and weren't happy with the pool of people they had gotten. And so I was asked to apply, got that, moved down to Jackson, which was about an hour away. Lived in Jackson Hole off and on for about another year or so. And then got another job offer in California and turned that down in order to come to the Spokesman Review. Okay. And I got my job at the Spokesman Review because I was at that mountain workshop I was speaking of earlier, and we were riding the back of a pickup truck, as one does in Kentucky. And Brian Planka, a really famous photojournalist that happens to be a buddy now, obviously, and at the time was somebody that I greatly looked up to. He just won Photographer of the Year, International Photographer of the Year, big deal here in Spokane. And he was in one truck full of all the coaches, the photo coaches, and I was in a truck full of the students. And we were driving down the road, some dirt, gravel, whatever, blacktop, whatever road through the corn of Kentucky. And he gave me a Hail Mary with a football going 35, 40 miles an hour from one truck to another. And I somehow managed to snag this football. And so by the time we got back to where we were going, it was all high fives and hugs. And literally, I'm convinced the reason we are sitting here today is because I caught that football.
That's awesome.
So I came to Spokane, got the internship here. The fellow that I was replacing what else do you do when you go to a college for a short amount of time as a professional? Not a sabbatical, but help me up here, people.
I didn't go to college. I don't know.
Oh, you didn't. Anyway, there's something else you do when you're not on a sabbatical, but you're doing something else. He was doing that, and he never came back. He got a job at the Portland Oregonian. It opened up a position for me here, and that's why I ended up in Spokane, Washington.
Wow.
And that was a stream of conscious story, but that was the long of it.
But Spokane, though, the Spokesman Review, that's a great newspaper for journalism, right? I mean, it has a history.
Historically, one of the best photojournalism newspapers. The writers are okay, but for sure, I mean, they're quality. But the photojournalism have always led as far as the awards and such go.
So that was a big deal to get on.
It was a very big deal. Very lucky break for me. Very big deal. Right place, right time.
Had you applied for that, or this whole thing
workshop? I was in Jackson Hole. It was odd. I was in Jackson. I'd just flown to Redding, California to go to that interview for that job that I ended up also turning down. And in the same time, I got a phone call from Brian. He said, "Hey man, listen, this guy is going on this thing that I forgot the name of at Stanford. And, he's going down there and we just found out we've got to replace him." And he was like, "You should apply." So I applied, and I had to tell the paper in Reading that I had some other irons in the fire and had to find out what was going to happen. And they gave me like 48 hours, and I was like begging somebody over here at the Spokesman Review to tell me if I'd gotten it or not. And finally they called and offered. It was during the World Series. I'll never forget it. It was Chicago Cubs were playing. I'm not even a baseball fan, but the guy that hired me, he was. And he was like, "Are you watching this game?" And I was like, "Yeah." I was at a bar in Jackson Hole, and he's like, "Well, I can let you go." And I was like, no, it's fine."
A leave of absence?
Not a leave of absence.
Not a sabbatical.
Not a sabbatical. There's people that are screaming right now.
Yeah, they know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
I don't know, man.
I'll think of it in the middle of the night. It'll wake me.
That's great. I'll just edit that right into that part. Right,
perfect.
Right here. Right there. I'll put it
that's
in there.
That's what it's called.
Okay. Yeah. That's it. The beauty of digital.
Oh, man. Yeah. And so anyway, it all worked out until it stopped working out with the newspaper business being the way it is. Such is life.
Let's talk about, before we jump into the rest of your career, So we normally don't interview people on this podcast like this. This feels like a fucking interview.
It does feel a bit like an interview.
It's not what we do. You know, we don't just like, so tell me about your background. We don't know. But I just thought it was important for people listening to know who they're listening to, right? That most of them are here because they follow my profile and I've directed them here over the time. But the ones that are already listening that didn't know who you were, it's important. So anyway, it does feel like an interview. But what are your thoughts on the way that photojournalism has gone? I understand why. I'm sure you do too, because of the digital world and subscriptions. It's not a subscription model as much. It's not as strong as it used to be. Well, I won't put words in your mouth, but talk to me about that. What's going on in the photojournalism world? What are your thoughts on the subject? Is there something that they could do differently that would change the course, or is it just, it's on the course it's going to be on and they're fucked eventually?
Well, if I had the answer to that, we would all be doing backstrokes and dollar bills right now.
Yeah, but you have to have an opinion.
I have an opinion. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's an opinion that's any different from a lot of other people. Newspapers, you can say whatever you want as a journalist. A lot of journalists despise advertising, which has always been very funny to me. Including photojournalists that I know and have looked up to or have been friends with who have kind of like turned their back a little bit professionally to me because I shoot advertising now and they feel like I'm a sellout.
Gotcha.
Which is so funny because it's the thing that keeps their job. So at the end of the day, it's a simple equation. And it's kind of an exponential, shrinking of the papers because you lose readership, mm-hmm. which means you lose ad revenue. You lose ad revenue means you can't keep the journalist on staff. You lose journalist on the staff. You can't produce a product that people want to read, so you lose more readers. It's just this vicious, cyclic, downward spiral that has been happening for well over a decade.
It's because of the internet.
Because of the internet, yeah. I mean, that's the simple fact. And I think everybody realizes that there could have been some things done early on that might have, you know, maybe slowed the bleeding. Instead of giving, back when the internet was new, papers gave content away for free. Mm-hmm. And then people became expectant of free content. And once that became a norm, it's hard to reverse that trend.
Start throwing up paywalls and things, and people are like, nope, I'm going somewhere else to get my news.
So we're in this weird, in fact, I just had this conversation with a friend of mine who's a reporter at the Spokesman Review today. And he told me, I think I'm getting this right. He said there has been 2,000 newspapers in the last 2 years shutter.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
And so what ends up happening is if you're familiar with the Associated Press, which is the primary feeder of the machine, mm-hmm. You know, they take content from all over, from all the members of the Associated Press, all the little small newspapers to the big newspapers, and they compile all that information and it gets pushed out onto the news realm of the interwebs and the newspapers. And as these smaller feeder papers shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink, there's less and less and less content, which is oddly going to affect what's available online, because the journalists that are mostly feeding the news cycle online are professional journalists at newspapers. Mm-hmm. And the scary part is that bloggers are taking over. They're not necessarily trained. It's losing its objectivity. It's a subjective news cycle now. Mm-hmm. And eventually the hope would be that we will get to a bottom. And once we hit that bottom, which everybody thought had already kind of come, but it keeps sinking, we would be able to kind of recover from there and build upwards. Because there's definitely, the interesting part of all of this is there's definitely a desire for more content consumption. But it's this lack of desire to pay for it is hard.
Yeah, but advertising is not going away, you know?
No, advertising is not going away.
As you say, we get to a bottom and then it rebuilds, but it will be a different form and a different format. It's not going to be in the form of a newspaper. It's going to be in a form of some sort of an app or something like that where you know, like an Apple iTunes where you subscribe to a service or something. So you're gonna subscribe to some sort of news service, and it's going to be digital, and it's going to be glorious, and there's going to be moving pictures, and there's going to be all kinds of shit that's sliding across your screen and doing crazy stuff on the screen, and they'll have ads there on around it and in it, and product placement and all of the different stuff that was, I can see a melding of traditional television and traditional journalism all kind of melded into this digital media of some sort. And that's how it will be reborn. And you'll have to pay for that, because that's not going to be cheap to produce. And the ad revenue from that is what's going to make the next big, you know, Time Warner or, you know, Associated Press organization or whatever it is. I think that's how it will end up happening. Advertising money is too powerful. It's never going to go away. It just keeps coming around in different forms.
We'll see some kind of iteration of what you're talking about only after the free content doesn't stimulate us anymore.
And like you say, the free content, it's going to be so biased at some point, right? That people are not going to, they're not going to want that anymore. They're going to want to, everybody's going to get sick of it, and they're going to want some sort of, okay, we need a source that's unbiased, that's just giving us the facts so that we can form our own opinion, you know?
Mm-hmm. The good news is for photographers is that it's a very visual world these days. I mean, just look at Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a very, very visual world, and we will have a place in that.
100%.
And it's exciting. It's really hard right now to encourage young people. It's young photojournalists, young journalists in general, because currently right now there is no place really for them to graduate college from and go to and even attempt to pay back the student loans that they've amassed.
Yeah, I can see that.
And so they're freelancing, and you know, I've all but eliminated my editorial content in my freelance. I take a few jobs here and there. Even the big newspapers hardly justify getting out of bed. There's a few I do. If it's a cool assignment, you know, great. I had to turn one down this week. In fact, not because I probably would have done it. It was a good one. It was for, I think, USA Today. Yeah, USA Today. And they actually pay okay. I mean, that's it though. It's like okay. It's like a little bit better than glorified beer money, you know.
Yeah.
But their assignments are usually pretty cool. So, but man, it's hard as a freelancer. I mean, coming out of college, that's the only time you could afford to do that kind of stuff.
I don't know where you go. I mean, where do you go these days if you're coming out of college? You're not getting a job with a newspaper, because the only people at the newspaper are the old goats that have been there forever.
Well, they're actually
the ones that have their job still.
Well, or it's all, like in the case of the Spokesman Review is a prime example. Every time they have a round of layoffs or they have attrition, they hire somebody
cheap.
Yeah. Today,
get rid of the expensive people, bring on the cheap people.
The person I talked to today said that they were pulling up some records, and they are making less today than they were making in 2003.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's healthy considering everything else has gone up.
And it's like, exactly. That is 16 years ago. They were making more money 16 years ago at that newspaper than they are today. And part of the way they're doing that is by hiring cheap, new, young people who don't have any other options. It's really, it's an unfortunate circumstance. So when I run into young photojournalism students, I'm the money guy. When I do these workshops, I'm the guy that does the money spiel on how you have to make it and how you have to charge accordingly and how you have to say no to the $100 jobs.
That's funny, because I do the same thing at the workshops. I'm doing one in November in Vegas, and that's what my talk is about, the money thing. I talk about how to price, how to make it, how to turn down jobs, how to get other people to share in the cost of a job, all that kind of stuff, you know? And that's what it comes down. You got to be smart about it. Taking on every job that comes in the door is not going to get you where you think it's going to get you.
No, you know, that's what I say. You know, if you are, you know, as a very young starting out photographer, sometimes you feel like you just have to pay rent. And I get that. I've been there.
Totally.
My first year as a freelancer, I made $17,000.
I get it.
And I went from a full-time job with good benefits and everything else to $17,000. And I took everything that came across the door. And I understand that. But it's at some point, and it's hard to tell kids not to do that. You educate and you hope for the best and you hope it sticks. And when they can do that, they will. But, if you are always the guy that takes the $200 newspaper job every time somebody calls, you will have an unlimited supply of $200 newspaper jobs and you'll never break free of that cycle.
Nope. That's the same thing with, you know, exactly the same thing that I talk about. If you're doing the real estate, you're taking those $200 real estate shoots all the time, you're never going to get out of it because you're going to be so swamped with $200 real estate shoots, you'll never have the opportunity to take the the $5,000 architecture shoot because you just the time isn't available to you and you're so reliant on those clients that are feeding you those $200 jobs so that you can pay your mortgage or your bills or whatever that you just can't. I get it. I totally get it. It's hard.
Very hard. It's very, very hard. And I remember, I don't remember exactly what assignment it was, but I remember when I was starting to say no to stuff and being absolutely freaking terrified.
Yeah.
And
it is. I mean, because you're.
They're never going to call me again. Right. I've just burned that bridge. They're never going to call me again. What happens if I need, you know, it's like, and I get all that, you know. So I think I just brought on another roommate or something at the time.
Yeah. Blood bank, sperm bank, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, man, I get it. And that's a hard part, you know, and we talk about, you know, being a niche photographer, and people are like, is it better to specialize? Is it better to do everything? And when you're starting out, it may be better to do everything just so that you can A, get experience, B, build those relationships, because you and I both live on the relationships that we've built in the past. Absolutely. That's how we make our living.
I think most businesses in general, that's how it operates.
Sure. Well, some of them are commodities and they make their, you know, they do their business based on price, you know, cheapest price for that commodity.
True.
Photography is not a commodity. At least it shouldn't be.
Right.
You know, some people like to look at it that way for sure. But it is not a commodity. And so you're hiring us for our skill and talent. And it's hard to start getting into that niche and specializing. I specialize in architecture photography, and even more niche than that, I specialize in commercial architecture photography, which is it's like super fucking niche, especially in Spokane, Washington, you know? And people in other small towns have written and they're saying, you know, how do I do this? And I live in a small town. How do you make that work? You know? And it's relationships. I mean, that's it. And the only way you're going to build those, unfortunately, is to take some of the jobs that you may not want to do or, you know, maybe outside of your comfort zone so that you can build the relationships with people for future stuff. Cause you know, people don't tend to stay at the same job forever, you know, so that art director you're working with at XYZ company that has all the shit clients, hopefully will work their way up to another company someday.
Exactly.
And remember that they like working with you and bring you with them when, you know, to hire you for that project. So it's all about relationships. Can't stress that enough. And that's one of the things that try to tell people starting out, you know, it's like you got to turn some stuff down, but you can't turn everything down. It's a hard balance to figure out.
It
sucks.
And you know, it's interesting too, is like photographers, like a lot of artists in general, a lot of times let their ego get in their way. And I know I was like that when I was younger, especially, I think. And I think you gotta realize that, especially now that the competition is fierce for the jobs that pay well, you need to leave your ego at the door. Mm-hmm. You need to remember your grandmother's manners that she tried to teach you, the pleases, the thank yous, and don't be an asshole.
That's it. Don't be an asshole.
And so many people get tripped up on it. It's so funny. There was a time, I think, when, and this was even before me, I would say, and I'm fucking old, when you could be an asshole as long as you had the talent.
Mm-hmm.
And those days are, in my opinion, all but gone. There's a couple of assholes that slip through the cracks that are just maybe superstars. But for the most part, starting out, you can't be an asshole, even if you're awesome.
Well, and that's something when people, you know, they read, they have the internet, the school of the internet, you know, and they're like, well, somebody's using your image. You need to drop the fucking hammer on them, send them an invoice and tell them to take that shit down. It's like, well, slow your roll a little bit, man. Don't be an asshole, right? That's a good phrase. They probably didn't know.
And we've all had that happen.
Take the time to send them a message and say, hey, glad you loved the images. You know, it was a really fun project. You guys did a great job designing it, or you know, whatever the product is or whatever the service is. You know, it's a great service or a great product or whatever it was, you know. I had a great time working with such and such. Unfortunately, their license doesn't carry through to third parties. I would love for you to be able to use the images and get more traction on the project, but let's talk about how I feed my family, you know, whatever that conversation is. But, you know, reach out to them, be respectful. Don't be an asshole.
Don't be an asshole.
That's it. I mean, and people are just, the internet tells them that this is the way things are supposed to be. And it's like, well, not necessarily, that's not necessarily who you want to be listening to, you know. Use, like you say, the manners that you were, that you were raised with, and just treat other people the same way. So,
Don't talk like we talk on the podcast.
No,
then you'll be fine.
Fuck no. But you know, we do what we want here. This is, you know, we're not looking to sell anything necessarily.
Right.
So, of course, if people want to send us money, I'll gladly put the address in the show notes.
And, I'll take it.
Yeah. Make it out to cash and Jen.
Yeah.
And
to
I
cash.
Can just
we don't want to pay taxes on it.
No. But, okay. So you left the paper.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that was a downsizing thing or what?
Yeah, that was a, so the policy at that paper was last hired, first fired.
Okay.
And so I was the last hired, first fired. And so I had been planning on stepping up. They had been there was talk the layoffs were going to happen and they were talking about offering some buyouts. So I've been talking to my family about doing a buyout. And then it kind of came down and I got laid off, which is interesting because I got the same package as the buyout, but the paper being, I don't know. I still don't know why they did this, but they did the layoffs. And then the next day or the day after, like a day or two later, they asked if anybody wanted to take a buyout. Well, like a ton of people volunteered, or at least several people volunteered, including somebody in the photo department. So now all of a sudden they had a surplus, or no, sorry, they were short a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so they called me back, like, 2 or 3 days later, and they're like, Jed, you know what? We would love to have you come back and work at this book's review.
Did you jump on it?
Hell no. I told him to sit on and spin, dude.
Man, you know, okay, so think about the guy that's still there. So they lay off a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And you're like, whew, made it through that round of cuts.
Oh, dude.
And then they come through 2 days later, and they start offering buyouts. How quick would you be to jump on that before you were in the next round of layoffs, right?
Yeah. I mean,
that's a no-brainer to
But it
me.
Depends on if you have okay, let's put it in their shoes, though. They're 45. They have a 7-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And the only place in town that employs writing print journalism or photojournalism or whatever that your trade is in the newspaper, and they're the only act in town. Maybe you go work for the Inlander for a quarter of the pay.
Yep. You get the buyout, and then you go open a restaurant and start shooting
that's
ad photography.
That's a brilliant idea.
Right?
That's what I did, but
it seems to be working out all right.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah. I mean, that is a... I think that I got a whole lot of luck and a whole lot of the right place at the right time.
Answer me this. All of the stuff that you're doing, like with the restaurant and the building and the, running this business of the restaurant and these things, where do you learn that skill in the time that you were in college for 7 years and then went and did all these internships across the country and then did photojournalism and stuff? Where did you learn all the craft that you've been doing?
Trial by fire. I mean, I did it. I just decided I was going to do it. And,
I mean, did you take fucking wood shop and school?
No,
was
I didn't.
Your dad a carpenter?
Yeah,
did you pick up some of this stuff?
Well,
not everybody can do that.
Like, no,
I've
they
seen
can't.
People try to build shit, and you're like, yeah, that's real nice, man. Are you blind in one eye? What happened there? Why don't these corners meet up, you know?
You know, I don't know. I don't know why. People ask me that all the time, and I don't really know. I kind of am one of these dudes that, like, it's funny because I'll get obsessed like something with like photography or climbing or fly fishing or, you know, whatever it is, carpentry, welding, building a car. I don't know, whatever it is that I'm currently in the state of mind to do, I just do it until I get good at it. Mm. And then I typically get bored of it and going to be a pilot, whatever it is, mm-hmm. like that, whatever that day or that month or whatever it is, I kind of have like the craft ADD, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. And the building thing was kind of a trial by fire. Literally, I was convinced by a buddy of mine who I'm super thankful for to get in the building. He helped me get into the building. And then he was like, you know, here's the building. It's knee deep in pigeon shit and there's no windows in it. And it's raining inside every time it's, you know, raining outside, you know, and it's, by the way, it's three stories and like, you know, here's a shovel.
Good
and
God.
I went and literally bought a hammer and like, you know, I mean, I had done some like Habitat for Humanity. I was a farm, you know, I grew up in the country and did farm kid stuff, you know, Boy Scout. I was a Boy Scout, teaches you some crap, you know, Eagle Scout, all that. That you
of course
know.
You were.
And so I think just over the years, I don't know. The answer is I don't know. I just did it, and then until I got reasonably decent at it, and then I took years off. It was interesting timing too, because it was like the best year I'd ever had in photography. I had like climbed from that $17,000 to the next year, you know, I'd made whatever $25,000 to the next year. I made like $40,000 and whatever, I was climbing up, and I got to, you know, however fast forward 6 or 7 years down to when I got that building. And, you know, it was the best year. I was making pretty good money, traveling all over the world, loved what I did, bought a building, basically stopped shooting for like a year and a half and built a building.
How has that affected your photography career?
Actually, I, you know, it's
as far as those relationships and people calling you for jobs and stuff like that.
The great part about it is I kind of put all of that editorial stuff on ice during that time. Cause at that time, a lot of my work was editorial. Mm-hmm. I was doing a lot of magazine or a lot of newspaper stuff and some magazine stuff. And then an occasional outdoor advertising campaign, which historically doesn't pay a whole lot in the outdoor advertising world, outdoor sports. And so, when I landed a couple of big, like non-sport clients, and I had a really good year, and I was able to kind of keep those clients cause I'd just gotten them, and all the other clients kind of got iced, which was great. Cause it kind of allowed me to like walk away. I was like, you know what? I can't take this. I said that no a lot. You know, I got the phone calls and I was like, I'm sorry, I can't. I didn't tell why. I just said, I can't. I'm busy. Mm-hmm. And now coming out of that, this has been years ago. This has been 5 or 6 years ago at this point. But now I'm able to have this like client base that I really love. And it's not a deep client base, but they're typically larger clients, and they're clients exactly in the wheelhouse of what I like to do. Yeah. And they're not necessarily in one genre. I'm not a complete, you know, pinpoint specialist like yourself. I'm a people photographer.
Right.
And these all have people in them, but they're right in my wheelhouse, and I've been able to keep those, and I've picked up a couple along the way too. So it's been,
who are some of the clients?
Some of the clients I still have, I just actually yesterday, talked to Lululemon. I'm doing another shoot with Lululemon. They're a great client. They come around about once every year or two.
Yep.
Super fun to shoot. First Light is another clothing company. They make camouflage clothing.
Okay.
I still shoot for them quite a bit. I just did that big photo shoot with a regional bank here in town. Mm-hmm. It's a big bank, but Washington Trust.
It's pretty diverse. I mean, Lululemon to Washington
Trust.
But it's
all kind of people, you know. It's all life. Essentially, at the end of the day, it's lifestyle.
Sure,
it's lifestyle photography. Right. Is what it is. You know, I have a really close client that I've been working with for years, which is called Nemo Equipment. They make tents and sleeping bags and sleeping pads. We just did a big shoot with them this year. You know, I have this like really, I try to stay in the sports realm as much as I can, but at the end of the day, I guess I am kind of a lifestyle photographer.
Well, it's like the people who, you know, like Jimmy Chin and some of these guys who are out photographing climbers or something. The only way that they are able to do that is because they're climbers themselves.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
they get the lifestyle, right?
Sure.
So, you're going out and you're shooting for some of these first sites and things like that, because that is the lifestyle that you live.
Sure.
And so it makes you the perfect candidate to shoot that and capture that. And you can get out there and do that, and you know what's coming and you know what to expect. And it's just all of that stuff makes you better at that particular genre of stuff. Lululemon, I mean, come on, that's not hard to look at, right? So that's one that, you know.
Yeah.
I get it, man. The thing is, you know, we talked a little bit about people, you know, finding a niche and not being an asshole and getting out of that $200 over and over and over cycle and stuff. And then there's also the group that is not charging enough. Like they're it's hard to believe that you're getting paid to do this, right? Especially
right.
being new. And so you're undercutting, maybe not on purpose. And all the people that have been around a long time are like, this guy's fucking up our you know,
I know.
Market. But it's not always their fault. Sometimes they're just, they don't understand that, hey, you're leaving so much money on the table, dude. You're at the point now where you're good enough to compete with the rest of us, but you're way underbidding these jobs and way undercharging. And so I think people have a hard time sometimes stepping up and saying, hey, this is what it's going to cost to do this project correctly, because they're afraid they're not going to get it, or they're afraid that they're too new, or they don't have the experience, or whatever the case is, you know. But
yeah, and I remember, like, I had one employee for a while, and I know you've had employees, and I think you just hired some people, and I've always kept, and you have a shop here, and you know, it's awesome. And I always kind of wanted to go this route, but for whatever reason, I've always kept almost zero overhead, and like zero mm-hmm. overhead, except for that time I had that, you know, obviously I have my gear and mm-hmm. my stuff and my, you know, all the things that go with just having a business. But, as far as like my overhead goes, like what I make is like a large percentage of what I take home.
Well, and that gives you the flexibility,
it does.
Like you said, to just back away a little bit and do something else for a little bit, whether
it does.
It's, you know, rehab a building or start a restaurant or whatever that is. But that would be very hard for me.
Yeah.
People are counting on a paycheck here.
Yep.
And I got to pay the rent and, you know, leases on equipment and, you know, all that kind of stuff, you
yep.
know. I don't think either way is wrong. It's just...
But I guess the point I was trying to make... No, neither way is wrong. The point I was trying to make is the conversation I've had with people on this very subject is that they're like, well, those guys, I'm going, okay, so Tony is applying for, you know, or bidding a job out, and I'm bidding a job out.
I see where you're going. Yeah.
And so they're like, well, hey, listen, yeah, I'm doing it for $5,000 and Tony's trying to charge $9,000, but I'm taking home $4,700 of that and Tony's only bringing home $3,000 of it. Mm-hmm. He's like, who's, you know, and I think that comes into play a little bit on certain people.
It does.
And
people working out of their bag for sure.
Exactly.
Can do it for less money
and they're
still
like,
take home
more right. or equal or more. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a thing too. And I've had that conversation with people before, and sometimes it's hard because you just have to either, you know, it's hard.
Well, that's very similar to the dilemma that brick and mortar stores have versus online stores,
yep.
right? I mean, the same thing. It's yep. like, yeah, you can get it online for less, but we can't do that because we have employees in brick and mortar. We have to pay for this spot. We have to pay for our local, you know, advertising and all
our
taxes
employees
and
all
of that shit, yep. right? And shipping and, you know, I mean, all this stuff that they have
and toilet paper.
Exactly.
You always got to have toilet paper.
You got to have, and the softs, the 2-ply shit, not the sandpaper stuff.
There's some 3-ply out there.
Oh.
Shit tickets? Yeah. Mountain money. We call it mountain money.
Yeah. More recently been buying Angel Soft because it's septic friendly.
Oh, I haven't checked our toilet paper if it's septic friendly. We have a septic system.
You better check that, homie. You want to check. You can't be throwing just anything down there. You'd be clogging up your whole drain field.
Oh, God. This is a great podcast. This is so informal or informational.
It is for anybody who's living and moving to the country.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you got a better check, man. I mean, we don't even have the bathrooms in that place yet, but because of the RV,
oh,
I was
no.
like, ooh, septic. We got to make sure we're using the right toilet paper and all that stuff.
Oh. We should pause this and I should call home now.
Don't flush. Stop the toilets. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, beer break.
Yeah.
So you might hear a little jump in the audio. We had to grab beers. I just paused it. And I don't edit these things, really, so you're going to hear it.
Hmm. It's delicious.
It is.
Never had one of those.
They're pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Paul, who used to work for me, who was on our podcast mm-hmm. recently, his wife works for Full Sail.
Oh, really?
And Session is one of the beers that brewery puts out. Have you been there?
I've never been there.
It's down in Hood River.
Yeah. I know where it is. Oh, awesome. No. I have been there.
The Full Sail Brewery?
I have. Dude, I love Hood River.
I do too. Hood River is really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
We're headed to Bend this weekend.
Nice.
My birthday.
It's a fun
45.
4 or 5.
We did an Airbnb.
Cool.
We're going down to stay right on the river down there.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's never been down there, but I love that city, gorgeous. Man. I would move to that fucking. Everything revolves around being outdoors.
Yeah.
I mean, it's freaking amazing.
It's a cool town.
It is. And you know what's interesting is that it doesn't have a downtown. Like Spokane has a downtown. Mm-hmm. Seattle has a downtown. Bend doesn't necessarily have a downtown. And because of that, they don't have all the transients. The problems that like Seattle and California cities and we have here because of the downtown area, you have this big congestion of people, this very dense population, and you end up with all the transients down there, the beggars and the homeless and all of this stuff. Cause it's, you know, but Bend doesn't seem to have that because there isn't a well-defined downtown area. It would be too spread out, you know, which I thought was pretty interesting.
That's cool. I haven't been to Bend in years, but it's a kick-ass town.
Have you seen the, Well, I was going to say, have you seen how bad homeless population is getting? I don't know what the solution is for that stuff. I don't think we're going to cure it on
this
podcast.
We're not going to cure it on this podcast.
But
everybody's talking about for the mayoral race though. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I mean, obviously I have a building downtown. I had two homeless guys walk into the building today on separate occasions while we were working. One guy had a Red Bull can and he was like, "Do you have any water?" And I was like, "No." And we don't. We have a toilet that if you need water, you have to open the back of the toilet and scoop it out because we don't have water. The plumbers are coming on the 6th to install all of our sinks. And I would have probably given the man some water. He was rugged.
Mm.
And the other guy walked in and he said, "Are you the bus man?" And I was like, "The bus man?" He's like, "The boss man. Are you the boss man? I'm looking for some work. I got to make $5 to go to Liberty Lake." And I'm like, "No, dude, I don't have, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't have anything."
Jesus. Yeah. I used to be next door to your spot.
Yeah. I remember.
And
that.
I would come in every morning to the studio and have to kick somebody out of my doorway that was sleeping in it.
Yeah.
And the bad part is that they would have pissed in it and took a dump and puked in it and everything else, man. And there would be half eaten whatever's left in there. And so I'd have to get a hose and a bucket every morning and like hose and wash out the entryway and get all their feces and piss and everything out of there. It was a total pain in the ass. This is a major problem with any downtown area these days, you know. It sucks. I don't know why you'd be in fucking Spokane. I'd go somewhere warm, dude.
I know. Well, it's warm right now.
It is now, but they're here in the wintertime. People are just sleeping under bridges and out in fields and downtown and all over the place. It is freaking cold, man. There's no way I would stick around here.
It is.
I would start walking and just head on down to
wherever.
Somewhere that it didn't get cold at night.
Yeah, where'd you go? Head to Montana or just head south?
Mm-hmm.
You just head south.
South, yeah.
Just head south.
That'd be it.
Tri-Cities? Keep on keeping on.
Further south than Tri-Cities.
Well, you got to get there first.
I'm talking about Southern California.
That's a hell of a walk, dude. I mean, that's a hell of a daunting task to wake up one day and be like, "I'm just going to start walking down to SoCal."
Well, didn't you see George Carlin's thing about hitching a ride, you know?
I did.
Oh, man, he does this thing. I'll leave it. Just Google it. It gets pretty vulgar.
Put a Google on it.
Yeah. Cool. Anyway, so now you're doing lifestyle stuff. You're opening a restaurant, a couple of kids, moved out to the country, rehabbed a house. I'm jealous, mm-hmm. man. You know, I consider myself a pretty... I know a lot about photography. I know a little about a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
but only a lot about like one thing, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of
me. And I've always thought, you know... I know a lot of shit, you know, I don't know everything there is to know about a lot of stuff, but I'm diverse in my knowledge, but I haven't run into a whole lot of people that have that and more. I mean, you inspire me to do a lot of cool
thing.
Shit. So yeah,
but I think if you talk to people that are really good at some of the things that I try to be good at, I mean, I feel like they would be like the kind of mediocre photographer friend that you keep around, but are never threatened by.
Sure.
I think that's kind of where I'm at on everything else.
Yeah. And, you know, but that's how you pick up the stuff, right?
Yeah.
Is you have friends that are good at other things, and that's their thing. That's their interest. And you just learn by osmosis from hanging out with those friends, you know,
yeah.
which is fine. the welding thing, you got to teach me how to weld.
I did learn how to weld.
Where'd you learn how to weld?
I had a few people teach me, but Jess Ross Kelly, last summer, he's the one that ended up getting me to buy that particular welder. And then we sat down and put it all together, and he brought up a bunch of steel, and he showed me, we both wore helmets, and he went over all the stuff, and then he came over several other times and we worked on several things together. And he's the one that kind of taught me how to do it, and really just taught by like showing. It wasn't, you know, there was a lot left to learn.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a class. Yeah. It was just like, hey, do this.
No. Yeah. And kind of like, you know, this is how you do this, and this is how you do that, and this is why, and, you know, but basics on the basic level of it.
He was a welder by trade, right?
He was a welder by trade.
I remember you saying that. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yep. He was a welder by trade.
That sucks. It's unfortunate. Hopefully he can live on through you teaching me how to do some welds, man. I want to learn it, man. I want to get
it. Yeah, no, it is fun. Sorry, I stepped away from your mic again. You were yelling at me about that, and now it's going to be loud again. You're going to have to do
it. I'm watching it here, and the levels,
the nose ring that I don't have, but I could attach to the mic would keep me from moving my head back and forth, and so I wouldn't do this.
Yeah, it makes a big difference in post. I got to try to do all that stuff, and we're trying to make a really good sounding podcast, and as you saw when you walked in tonight, all the equipment has changed again.
God, I gotta tell you, this place is real fancy.
It's getting fancier and fancier every week.
I mean, it really is. It really feels professional in here. You ought to hire better talent.
I don't know where we'd find it. We'd both be out of a job if we had better talent. This is just for fun. I mean, people, I don't know if we have any listeners yet or if they're both still listening each week, but either way, it's for fun. We talk about whatever we want. I've always said it's loosely based on photography. We've never done interviews necessarily with the guests that we have. I want to talk to them about bear attacks and hunting and opening restaurants and things like that. I get to know people more so than, so how did you get your start in photography? You know, this kind of stuff. And I want to get more creatives on here. And you know a whole bunch of people that are in the creative field. And I think we should start reaching out and getting non-photography creatives in to talk. You know,
it'd be fun.
Once we get our table built and it's a little more professional.
We'll try to work on that next week.
I'm not putting pressure. I'm just messing with you, man. But to that point, that's why I want to learn to weld. One of the things, and the reason that I know a little bit about a lot of things, and you probably do too, is I hate relying on other people for shit. If I want to make a table for my studio, for my podcast room, I want to be able to do that.
Right.
I don't want to be like, oh, I got to get somebody to build this, or I got to pay somebody to do that. I'm like, I could do that myself. I just got to figure out how to weld. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or I just got to figure out how to, you know, I know I can rehab this bedroom. I just need to learn how to use a chop saw and paint and, you know, that. And so I teach myself or figure it out or whatever, you know, or changing the starter on your car or whatever it is, you know what I mean? So,
and then you run out of time.
That
and
becomes the
to,
problem.
And then you have to be, and so where I'm at now, which is interesting, literally I woke up at 5:15 this morning, and not because I wanted to, get up at 6, but I got up at 5:15. I went down, I sent a couple of photos over to a client. I checked some emails. I went and I literally got home at like 6 p.m. And so I've been working since, and now I'm here. We are at whatever time it is, 9 p.m.
And this podcast is over. This is the longest one we've had. And when we started, I said, hey, Jed, this is probably going to be a short one.
Well, then you started talking to me and I just can't
stop. This is the longest podcast we've ever recorded. So did you think of a way for people to get their B&H gift card this
the
week?
The bear.
Okay. All right.
We're going to do bear. Bear.
You're on board with that?
The spelling of how you would like.
Okay. You're on board with that. Yeah. Just making sure. All right.
Best photo of a bear or bear.
Yeah. All right. Everybody's got that. And the other one is still open for now. So we probably ought to end it because we are over 2 hours.
Okay.
So
I think, 2 hours. No.
Yeah, man.
No, I got here at 8.
Well.
It's 9.
Okay.
It's only an hour.
Oh. Gotcha. Scare me. I was like, good God, it's been 2 hours already. Nobody's going to listen to this.
It's not even been an hour because I actually got here at like 7:55. So we're probably right at an hour.
Okay. I was like, good God, nobody's going to listen to this thing. It's so long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're good then. Whew. Heavy word.
Golly. We've only had one beer.
Well, I was
you should
like,
have been
man,
doing
been
it in beer
nursing
times.
That. I was like, man, we've really been nursing these beers, my God. So Well, because we stopped for the beer is what screwed me up. So we're on like track two or chapter two, and we're 10 minutes into that. And so it doesn't show me the entire elapsed time. And so I'm looking at 2:09, 12 seconds, and I'm like, oh man, it's been 2 hours and 9 minutes, but that's not the case.
No, it's been 1 hour and like 5 minutes.
All right, good. So we had a little bit of time.
Okay.
I didn't want this to end.
Yeah. What were we talking about?
I forget. Being good at shit slightly like average at everything. And so, so tech is my thing. I'm probably more techy than you.
See, no, I'm terrible. Go to my website. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, www.jedconklin.com.
Did you do anything with it yet? Is it still down?
Let's see.
Jedconklin.com. I don't have my glasses. I can't, I don't even know if I might end up on a Pornhub here or something. Nothing.
It's just a white
screen. Still nothing. Just a white screen. Yeah. Now I don't have Flash installed. So if it's a Flash based site, from 1985.
Oh, it is. Then you'll see it. It's on there. If yeah. you got, but there's a mobile. Flash. Let's see if the mobile.
I don't
thing,
use Flash, so
I don't use my mobile.
What is this? LiveBooks or something?
No, it was a custom Flash site back in the day.
Oh, good God! Would you pay like $20,000 for it?
No,
that's what people charge for websites back then. It's insane.
Oh, the mobile platform works.
Ah, because that's a HTML conversion when you're on mobile. Yeah. Why is your screen fucking yellow?
Oh, because it's after 9 o'clock, it goes on to the night color.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, to keep me awake
light.
At night.
I gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. See, I don't go to bed this early, so.
I've been in bed for like 2 hours normally. Yeah. Not normally. Normally, I would say I'm going to bed about 9 to 11. And then 9 to 11. 11's very late.
So the kids go to bed at like 8:30, and the wife usually jumps in there with them. And then I stay up, and that's when I do all my learning. I get on YouTube, and I watch YouTube for like 2 hours. And then I finally crash out. I'm all tired and shit. And then I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and start the day over again. Now, I'm traditionally a morning person. I'd much rather be up early in the morning. I'd rather get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and have that quiet time and the coffee and all that stuff. But it doesn't happen. So the kids inevitably wake up, and the wife's off at working out at Orange Theory or whatever it is. So I end up playing Mr. Mom in the mornings and getting them ready for school or tennis camp or changing diapers or whatever it is. So I don't know what I'm talking about at this point. Just kind of
because you said you were a tech guy.
Yeah. So, but that's when I do all my learning. Like I'll get on and I'll learn how to like use Logic Pro or use this mixer or this rack system that we're doing or whatever it is. I do that at night after the kids go to bed, and then I come in and I start playing with it the next day in the studio and try to figure it out. So it's all self-taught, much like your woodworking skills or whatever. But my latest fascination, or I should call it obsession, is woodworking. So I've been like watching every video. Like I want to make my bench in the garage at the new house, and I'm learning all this stuff, like how to do dado cuts, and I want to sink my miter saw into the bench and have these fences set up and all this kind of shit. It's going to be fancy.
I'm going to sell all my tools. I'm just going to go over there.
Fancy. Yeah, it'll be perfect. I'll put a fridge in there full of beer and we can just hang out and cut shit.
It's fun. I've been building tables for a long time, and I just completely watched the YouTubes on how to do that. And
I got the big old clamps, like the 50-inch clamps, so I can squeeze the butcher blocks together and shit. I thought that was funny. Your wife the other day, when I posted a picture of the chainsaw, she's like, I got Jed one for his birthday. You guys totally go out and cut some shit down. She's awesome, dude.
She is. I've had a chainsaw my whole life growing up. You know, I've been working a chainsaw since I was, I don't know, a kid. And then I moved to Spokane into the city, you know, and I haven't had a chainsaw for like, I realize now I haven't actually been able to just like walk out in the garage and grab a chainsaw for like 15 years or something. And it's like a reunion.
We could cut a path from my house to your house and put in a fucking zip line. And
we'd have to cut to my neighbor's yard. They may not be all that.
Well, that's what the zip line's for. We'll zip over that part.
Mm.
Be amazing.
I think our houses are probably on the same elevation.
Pretty close.
There's a dip between us, but I think we're probably pretty close to the same elevation.
Pretty close.
Yeah, it'd be tough.
We'll stay on your
motorized zip line.
Yeah.
That would work.
Potentially.
It wouldn't work. That wouldn't work.
Yep.
No, that wouldn't work.
We've been battling the wasps. I had them treated. the house is infested, inside, outside, garage, everything. So I can't have the kids over there. I can't do anything. And I called the pest service and they came and sprayed. And then like the next day there's fucking wasps everywhere. They're like building new nests. They're like, oh, you destroyed an old one. We'll just build a new one. And I'm like, that didn't work at all. That was a waste of money.
Did they come back out?
So I called them and they came back out yesterday. And this was a chick. She's like full of tats and nose rings and like fucking wasn't afraid of nothing, dude. She came out and she's like, who was here? And I was like, I don't know his fucking name. So she looked it up and was like, ah, he was a new guy. Let me see what he sprayed. And went and looked at the history and was like, that would never work. I was like, well, no shit. They're everywhere. She says, I got something that'll take care of them. So she goes in the back of her truck and mixes up some kind of backpack, comes out, starts hosing shit down. Wasps are falling out of the sky and she's just swatting at them. They're stinging her. She didn't care. And I'm jumping around like a little girl dodging wasps. And she goes, let me tell you something. A mosquito bite is way worse than a wasp sting. And I was like, how do you figure that? And she says, a mosquito bite will itch and bother you for days. A wasp sting hurts for like an hour and then it's over. And I was like, well, that's one theory, but I don't want to get fucking stung right. Regardless, you know? So she's reaching up and like grabbing nests full of fucking wasps and like throwing them on the ground and stomping them off and shit. And
I'm barehanded?
Like, yeah. Barehanded, man. She's got a backpack full of chemical and she's just barehanded grabbing wasps' nests and
smoking
shit.
Cigs.
She was Marlboro Lights, man. Walking around, that shit was probably flammable too. She's wearing a backpack. It's, you know, in, like a flamethrower, you know, just getting ready to blow herself up. It was crazy, man. I couldn't believe this chick. She was 10 times the man I am. And she's just walking around handling wasps. And so when she was done, she's like, that'll do it. You know, give it a couple of days. They'll all die off and you'll be good to go. She did her job for fucking sure, man. So we'll see.
She's growing more tumors as we speak.
Yeah. And cancer. Well, she's already got the cancer from the cigarettes, but yeah, she's, I don't know, man. The first guy obviously didn't do the job. She took care of it. And hopefully that takes care of the wasps. They're aggressive fuckers, man. Super aggressive.
Yeah. You're talking about yellow jackets, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
We have a few.
Well, you want some? I got plenty.
In fact, our painter was there today mopping up some loose ends, or yesterday and today, but yesterday. And Courtney was like, he was out there trying to paint the door, and he said there was some wasps there, so he sprayed them. But really, I haven't really noticed it. We have bees. I have bees that bees I raise all, bees. I raise bees. Yeah. I have beehive, you know.
Elsa wants to come see your bees.
Oh, yeah.
She's super curious about bees. She asked me the other day, how do you raise bees? I'm like, I don't know, in a box. And she's like, well, how do they start? I'm like, I don't know. That's a good question. Jed would know. He's got bees in his front yard. She's like, can we go see him? I'm like, probably.
Yeah.
So sure. I don't know anything about it. So this is another topic I need to learn a little bit about. But she wants to come see your bees and figure out how you start a bee colony.
Sure. It's easy.
Is that what it's called? A colony?
Hive.
Hive.
Yeah. Colony.
Yeah, well, we'll wait. I'll leave the mystery because I want to know kind of myself. I don't understand how they start. Like, do you just go buy a bag of bees?
You do.
And be like, here's a starter bag.
You essentially go buy a starter bag of bees.
Okay.
Sorry to take the magic away. Ah. But there's a more exciting way to do it.
But what is the point of a wasp or yellow jacket? She asked me that today, too. She's very fascinated with flying insects lately. But she's like, what's the point of a wasp? And I was like, I don't know, tell you the truth. She's like, do they make honey? I'm like, no. They pollinate flowers? I was like, I don't think so, actually. I don't know what their point of life is, just to sting us, I guess.
It's like a mosquito. I think they're just part of the food chain. I actually think that they are meat eaters, too. I think they
They go after protein,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're after a protein. I'm not a etymologist or whatever.
So they eat smaller bugs or something like that? Or...
Yeah, but they'll get on, like, carcasses.
Really?
Yeah. So I think they're just part of the breakdown of the ecosystem.
This is a weird podcast, man.
It is all over the place.
Fuck, photography podcast? We're talking about all kinds of weird shit.
It's fine.
Yeah, well.
It's fine.
I mean, as the Joe Rogan Sister podcast, it's our responsibility to cover a variety of topics here.
It is. It is. So have you never hunted either, have you? And you don't eat meat.
Okay, I used to eat meat. I've never hunted. I don't know that I could kill like a deer getting a little drink of water out of a brook and just blam, blast the fucking thing. You know, I mean, I don't think I could do it, man. People is a different story. Like some asshole, I could probably shoot some asshole, you know, but I don't know, man, if I could do it with a deer. But besides that, I don't have the patience for it, dude. I went out with a buddy of mine one time. He's very much like you. He reminds me of you very much. And we went out, I went out with him twice hunting, actually, bow hunting and with a rifle. And we got in a tree stand and shit, and we're sitting there. And like 3 hours later, we're still sitting there. I'm like, this is the most boring shit in the world, man. Yeah. And at least in fishing, which is also equally boring to me, you can talk. When you're hunting, you're not even supposed to talk.
It like,
I'm trying to have a conversation.
Hunting,
yeah. He's like, shh. I'm like, dude, we've been here for 3 hours. I can't say anything. And he's like, you can't say anything. I'm like, this is ridiculous, man. This is the stupidest thing ever. I understand
it's
if you're
meditation.
Like starving and you want to, like, you need to kill something. Then, yeah. All right. So you're quiet and you hunker and you wait until it walks by. But dude, we were up there for hours. I was losing my fucking mind, dude. You got it's. I couldn't do it.
There's a lot of different types of hunting. That's one way. I do still tree stand hunt, but I think of it more. I can sit there and have sat there from daylight to dark. And for me, it's almost a meditation. It's a very long reflective time.
Are you sitting thinking about how you're going to design your new restaurant?
Yeah,
and
all
how
of
you're
it.
Do this.
All the
that,
things that you
that.
Didn't have time for every right. other moment of your busy day.
Well,
you
that's
can
the problem.
Think
is
about.
How do you have the time to go and do that? It feels like such a waste of time. There's 3,000 other things I could and should be doing than sitting in the woods for eight yeah. hours.
And a lot of the hunting I prefer the most is like big mountain. Typically after elk, where you're putting in 5 to 15 miles a day in steep country on the move. That's my preferred method. But essentially for at least whitetail hunting, it's virtually impossible to do that.
How do you get a big ass elk out of 15 miles deep in the woods? How are you getting that out of there?
On your back. I've never killed one 15 miles. You're never 15 miles from like a road necessarily. I mean, that's not true. I have certainly been that deep, but we've had horses or whatever.
So you drag it out to the road and then go get your car?
No, there's no dragging them. You're quartering them. You what they call quarter, and you carry out. If you have a full quarter, you're carrying about 100 pounds of meat per load, plus whatever other equipment you might have.
How?
In a backpack.
You're carrying 800 pounds in a backpack?
100.
Oh.
100.
I thought you said 800 pounds. No. I'm like, you're the strongest man on the planet, dude. You can carry
100 pounds of meat plus equipment. Okay. So you're...
That's still heavy, man.
Oh,
Jesus.
Hell yeah. It's really heavy. And, we've definitely done many, many pack outs that were, several miles. Usually they're always over a mile. Rarely are they over 5 from a car or from a place where you can get a truck or something. Or if you're way back in there, we have horses or whatever. And I've only done a couple of horse trips. But usually, like last year's bull was like about 3 miles and about, I think it's about 2,500 feet in elevation.
And you've shot a bunch of elk, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a guy the other day I ran into, one of the contractors on one of the houses or something like that. He was talking about hunting season or whatever, and whatever, I'm nodding along. And he says he's been hunting for 15 years and he still hasn't gotten a contractor. He says he still hasn't gotten an elk. He's been trying to hunt them for like 14 or 15 years. And I'm like, dude, I know a guy that shoots a couple every year. What are you talking about? Where are you trying to hunt them?
I know. It's not, dude.
Are they that hard? Are you just that good? Or what? I mean, what's happening here? Why can't this guy kill one in 15 years?
Hunting is one of the things I can say I'm pretty good at. And part of it is the amount of time and energy and effort I put into it. Most of it is time, energy, and effort, but there's a lot of
meaning like logistics, where you're going to go,
where
what time
you're
going to
go,
go
how long you're out there
okay.
and how long you're out there. I mean, these guys that get like 2 days to go hunt and the season's 2 weeks long and they hunt Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. I'm out there, there's been years where I've been out in the woods for like a month,
like a fucking Nat Geo photographer, man.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we come out and stuff, but I'm like hunting for a month I always hunt for at least 2 weeks. And I put my time in. A lot of it is putting the time in, finding out where you need to be and then putting your time in to do it. But the success rate, what I was getting at is I think the success rate, and we can Google this and we can put this in the notes if anybody's interested. Mm-hmm. I think the success rate in Washington for archery elk is like 9% of the people that buy tags get one.
Oh, wow.
It's less than 10%.
That's crazy. So are you hunting in Washington when you're hunting?
I usually hunt Washington and Idaho. Okay. Yeah, I usually deer hunt Washington and elk hunt Washington, and then always elk hunt Idaho, and sometimes I deer hunt Idaho.
Gotcha.
And a lot of, and some of my clients, you know, my clients are some of my photography clients, First Light being one of them. I shoot a lot for them as well while hunting. So I kind of double up, you know, I'm shooting a lot. And I end up ultimately getting a lot of editorial work out of it. I do, when I say editorial work, I still submit some stuff to my agency. I have an editorial agency that I submit work to, and they're not huge checks, but it's, you know, every few months you get a check in the mail that says whatever company just bought your photo.
That's a good topic, actually, for people who are interested in doing that sort of work. How does that work? Talk to us about how that works. So somebody who wants to be an editorial photographer, how do they deal with working with an agency? What should they expect of an agency? How do they get their work out there? How do they get hired for gigs? That kind of stuff.
Well, that's a lot. But the agency stuff, I'm not very good at. There's guys that make their full living shooting spec work, stock spec work, and they do pretty well, even in an editorial world.
So they go out, shoot an event or shoot some sort of lifestyle thing, whatever.
Upload
some
kind it of campaign, quickly.
Upload it to like a gallery and send it off to an agency of some sort.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And it's amazing to me, but excuse me, it's not my deal, but the red carpet guys do really well. Well into the six figures.
That's all in timing right there.
It's all in timing. Okay. It's not anything I'm interested in, but the agency that I work for definitely has some of the red carpet folks, the celebrity scene, which is interesting. For me, I'll go shoot something and it's all in the captioning, and then you upload it to their file and that's it. It's a keyword search that, and they're big. It's Zuma is who I, you know, work with.
So if they're looking for something with a guy in camouflage, shooting a deer,
yeah,
they'll search for that. And one of your images may come up along with a bunch of other people's that have submitted and tagged them that way.
Yep.
So you may not get, may not be tomorrow, may not be next year.
Maybe in 15 years.
All of a sudden it meets somebody's search criteria for what they're looking for.
The ones, it's funny because I see the same ones pop up all the time. I shot the Olympics in 2010, the Winter Olympics in 2010. Okay. That is always popping up.
Yeah.
I shot the first ever women's boxing Olympic trials, which just happened to be in Spokane. And I didn't really have a client. I had a client that I had to shoot for. I think it was the Associated Press or somebody. It was like a small client. So I was like, I shot some stuff, but then I went back for like multiple days and I shot it super artsy, like really high contrast, black and white, mm-hmm. like just kind of like trying to shoot it completely different than every other sport photographer there because I knew that's what everybody else is going to be doing.
Right.
And I have sold the snot out of that.
Now, is that they can't possibly be looking for to write articles about that event anymore?
I don't know.
It must be something else.
I think it's the people or the boxers or the fact that they're doing a story on women's boxing.
Women's boxing.
And this is the, this was a big
gym with kickboxing or something.
Or whatever. I mean, there's a billion things. They're like, or, you know.
So it doesn't necessarily relate to what that exact event was. They're not trying to like do a backstory on something.
But as far as women's boxing go, that was a pivotal time in women's boxing. So any probably article that was written probably makes mention of the Olympic, the first year the Olympics allowed women's boxing in there. So I'm assuming that is just speculation. Oftentimes it's in Europe or Russia or where, who knows, you know, Africa, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But, and then the other one is when I was in Iraq, I ended up going into these marshes, between the Tigris and the Euphrates River, there's a giant marsh system. And I was one of the first photographers that had been in there in several years. And I shot in there and that always pops up.
Now, you were there with like a Doctors Without Borders type of thing.
No,
I
work with a organization called Team 5. It's kind of my, that's the thing that I do to give back. That's my pro bono work that I do, my volunteer work that I do with that organization. And we do go to cool stuff.
Well, you go back and coach that thing and, in Kentucky.
I do that too.
Right? You were a student at it one time.
I was a student
and now you're
at
an instructor
it.
Back
yeah,
there, right?
Yeah, I was an instructor back there from time to time.
Mountain Workshop.
Mountainworkshops.org with
I'll
an
put
S.
That in,
Mountainworkshops.org.
Okay. I'll put that in the show notes, but
yeah.
We'll come back to that. But go ahead.
Yeah, and then, no, but I was in Iraq. I was embedded with a couple of different units in Iraq. And essentially I...
For just freelance or what?
Yeah, I just wanted to go, essentially. We actually got our credentials through the Inlander here in town, and it was during Obama's election. And so we went there we went there with the credentials to do a story on the election, which was, I don't even think it ever ran, but it was enough to get us the credentials to get through the military's police policing of the journalists. And so we got there, and then essentially I remember, this is so funny. I bought a bulletproof vest, on Craigslist, but it didn't have any plates. And I bought a Kevlar helmet on Craigslist or someplace, eBay, I don't remember. Yep. And, but I didn't have any plates for my armor. And so I found a guy in town that had them, who was a Marine. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, dude, these things are expensive. Yep. And if you go and get shot or killed, you know, he's like, you can either give me some cash or you got to give me some collateral. So I gave him my shotgun. So I found this note the other day. We moved. I actually found the contract, quote unquote. But essentially it says, I so-and-so give Jed Conklin my body armor plates in exchange for his Remington 870 shotgun, which will be returned to him upon his return from Iraq. It was pretty funny. So I traded shotguns for my, Jesus. So I mean, I paid for my own flight. I paid, you know, I got myself to Kuwait. I went with a rider buddy of mine, and we ended up just embedding with a couple different units and riding some stuff. We ended up selling some stuff to Mother Jones and some other places. But yeah, we just went.
Pretty crazy, right?
We just went. Yeah.
I did 4 years in the Middle East, man.
Yeah.
As a gunslinger. And it was, it's interesting, man. It's a whole different, it's totally different than the Western states, man. It's you can't describe it unless you've been there.
Yeah.
You know, we got a lot of service members, I'm sure, listening, people that have probably served over there and whatnot. And it's, but if you haven't, it's indescribable of how it is. It's, but that's cool that you were able to do that and licensing images from that. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's editorial work, so it's a different, it works on a different realm. There's not really any licensing.
Okay.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So,
don't you license your images for editorial use?
When you say, describe what you're referring to as licensing.
They pay you for the image for a specific use and duration.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you meant like, gotcha. No, they do that. Yes. It's not a duration. It's a use.
A one time for editorial. It's more of a use. Yeah. Yes. So we're going to run it in X magazine or X article.
And it's based on size and it's based on circulation.
Sure. Yeah. I got it.
And it's funny. If it's on a website, literally that's why they don't cut checks for every use. They just send you after it gets to a certain point.
It accumulates.
It'll be 50 cents.
Very much like my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
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 They can't just pay you. Oh, somebody watched your video. Here's a check. Here's your 4 cents.
9 cents. Yeah, exactly. So,
they wait until it reaches a threshold. Then they cut you a check.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I get it. I remember the editorials because I don't do much editorial work. In fact, I include it in my license because the fee is so nominal for editorial. I don't want
certain editorial, man. But I mean, there's certain magazines, you know, I've made really what I consider to be very, very good money on certain magazines.
Shooting a feature for a magazine.
Yes.
Yes. And I don't do that.
Yeah.
So for me, it would be licensing an image or two by a magazine of something I've already photographed. There's no money in that for me.
Yeah.
It's not worth me dealing with the magazine for that. If a magazine called and wanted me to go shoot a project, a feature for them, that would be a totally different.
You're talking
scenario.
About an architect. You're letting them use that image in the editorial.
So XYZ architecture firm.
Gotcha.
I include in their usage that they can use the photos for. I include editorial so that if they want to submit to a magazine, they don't have to come back to me and ask for usage and permission and all and pay something and blah, blah, just fucking get your traction out of it and go, that magazine is going to call me and try to license the thing. And I'm going to get my $4 or whatever the fuck they're paying for a couple of, it's not worth it to me. You know what I mean? But if a magazine, if Dwell or one of these calls and wants to do a thing, well, they have decent day rates. I mean, most of that stuff is decent depending on the project and you get, you know, publication out of it or whatever. And that's worth doing, but that's a totally different scenario.
Right.
You know, licensing is a pain. It's a mystery for a lot of people getting into it. And one of the things that I don't want to do is have to chase down licensing. So I put a pretty broad licensing terms on what I shoot. A lot of people think it's too broad, like I'm giving away the farm for the most part, but there's a thousand things I'd rather be doing, chasing down wasps, playing with my kids, whatever it is, than chasing down people who are using a photo on a blog somewhere, or, you know, some magazine that used a photo in the context of some bigger article. It's like, dude, I don't want to deal with that shit, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I understand there are people out there that earn their living that way, and there's nothing wrong with
that.
It's just, that's my deal. So,
yeah, I've chased down a few that I've caught over the years. Nothing ever really, mostly I just wanted to stop using them.
Yeah, and that's fine. Don't be an asshole.
Yeah, don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
We've gone back full circle.
I you know, and I have too. I've seen some and I'm like, you can't use that, you know, but I'm tactful about it. And
I'm not a dick.
Sometimes people, now I had a whole scenario, man, and I won't go deep into it, but I had a guy that is using photos, licensed, registered with the Copyright Office, photos of mine. I hired an attorney. We went after him. The attorney came back after multiple attempts, contact and discussions, whatever, with the guy. Attorney came back and said, I'm going to let the case go. I'm not going to proceed with this. And I'm like, what? This should be a slam dunk, you know? And he goes, here's what's going to happen. This guy has no money. He's running an auto parts store online out of his garage or whatever, you know, and he's stealing images from everybody else. And the guy was very blatant about this. I contacted the guy initially and he's like, you know, wasn't very polite, you know, basically told me to pack sand,
yeah,
you know, and he told the attorneys the same thing. And then he put up a page on his website, basically taunting us, telling people that, you know, feel free to take any images on my website that you want. You know, nobody can do anything about it. You know, the internet's the Wild West, basically. So the attorney said he wasn't going to take him to court. Why? And he said, the guy doesn't have any money. We're going to go to court. I'm going to spend all my time chasing this down, all my time in court, all of these things. The judge will award you that this guy has to pay you all this money, and then he's going to file bankruptcy, and he's going to close his website down, and he's going to open a new website under a different name, and he's never going to pay you anything, and you and I will never get a dime. And I'm going to have spent all this time and effort, and you're going to have spent all this time and effort and stress, and we're not going to get anything out of the guy, so I'm not going to chase this down. It's useless, you know? And that's the problem with usage and licensing and things, is if you have somebody like that, you're never going to see anything. You can't, there's nothing you can do about it. The guy basically gave me the middle finger and there was nothing I can do about it, even though they're registered, which is supposed to be a guaranteed $150,000 per occurrence. Can't do anything about it. You know, what are they going to take from him? The guy doesn't have anything. We're going to take his Pinto or whatever the fuck he's driving, you know? So
that
it's
sucks.
Different if it's Lululemon
or
somebody, right? Somebody that you can go after. They have assets and there's something that, you know, they have a reason that they need to pay you, but it's different when it's this guy working out of his garage. It's just not going to happen.
I've never gone after that. I've gone after the companies that are
right.
Yeah,
and like, they usually comply pretty quick, you know.
They do. They usually take it down and be like, I'm sorry. I'm like, yeah, but you've been using it for, like, you know.
Some compensation is,
yeah,
you know.
It would be nice.
When I do that, I do screenshot when I find
it. I did screenshot it.
I screenshot it also to have evidence so they can take it down. And I go, well, you did use it. You got, you know, you got some promotion out of it and stuff. Yeah. So you need to pay for the time that you used it, you know.
I had one go backfire on me because it was a company that was using an image that I had shot for another company that was selling their product on that particular website. And it was like a category, like this website had like a category of like whatever it was. It was like a camping store and under their camping kitchen supplies, they had like the banner, like the full page picture was mine on their website. It's a big company. And I was like, really? Are you serious right now? Like, this is crazy. So I didn't think anything about the client that actually I'd used the photo. I just assumed that they had used that photo to sell their goods and then that company just kept it. And so I called and I said, hey, listen, this is not cool. I mean, this is like, you can't be using this to sell your wares. And they apologized and blah, blah, blah. And then they called the client. I sent them a bill. And they were like, well, send us a bill. Let us know. Because they were pretty cool about it. I was pretty cool with them about it. And so I sent it. I was like a few hundred bucks.
Right.
They immediately emailed it to the client that I had shot the photo for.
Yep.
because they hadn't passed on the licensing.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden this client, and I've never worked with them since. And I don't know if I didn't intentionally burn that bridge, but, and I don't know that that's reason I haven't worked for that client anymore.
It can happen. And in what I do, that's the most common infringement that I have. You know, I shoot for an architect and then one of the subs, whether it's the, you know, the contractor or the engineer or the flooring guy or the whatever, they see it. And they use it too. They're like, oh yeah, this is awesome. I remember that project. And so they start using the photo to promote the business, you know, they did. That's the most common infringement that I get. They didn't realize that that doesn't pass on, you know, necessarily. And it was the same thing when I shot product. I would shoot a product for, say this beer company, right? And then the distributors or the retailers for this, you know, use that photo from them, not realizing that they need a license for that, you know?
Yep.
So it's all in the conversation, making very sure that, you know, the product that you're shooting, how is this going to be used? Do you have third-party retailers that are going to be using this photo? Do you need a license for third-party retailers and all that kind of stuff?
Yep.
And just getting everything out in the open up front, it's important. But again, whole nother podcast.
It is a whole nother podcast.
So
Should we wrap this up?
Yeah, I'm done. Are you done?
Yeah.
I want to go home.
It's kind of a rambling podcast.
It was
tonight.
A very rambling podcast, but I think it was a good opportunity for people who don't know you to get a kind of an idea of your personality. They got to hear your background. You know, I think they got a pretty strong understanding of who Jed Conklin is. So
cool. Well, go to my website.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I've been working. I mean, it's a classic. Like every photographer you've ever talked to, I think. I feel like 90. I'm going to put a number on it. I think like it's 99% of all photographers be like, "Here's my portfolio." But you know what? Most of this work is old.
Yep.
It's so funny. Mine is actually
never
true.
Done. It's never done.
It's never done. And I've been building my new website for over a year.
I've told people all the time, if you're waiting until it's all ready, it'll never happen. You know, when you're building a portfolio, launching website, don't wait until you think it's ready. Just get it out there. Just fucking launch the thing, you know, and you can always update it later. Otherwise it'll never happen.
It'll never
it's never going to be ready.
Yep.
All right, man. Well, I think that's it for episode 14, the actual episode 14.
14 squared.
Yeah. I don't know who our guest is next week, but we'll find somebody good. Maybe not even in the photography realm. We want to continue expanding on the whole creative thing. But don't forget about the contest. Get that $20 B&H gift card.
Bear.
That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. We are out of here.
Over and out.